There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Another couple hours of live local talk. And reminder, too, all these shows in podcast form. And the fastest way, I'm not just saying this either. I know you think I am. But I'm telling you, the first place our podcast posts, because people will say, hey, man, I want to go get the podcast. You know, when's it going to post up? Well, we post them up as soon as the hours are over, but then it goes through the digital matrix out there. And the first place it populates with our podcast, the quickest way to get them is through the FM Talk 106.5 app, which, lucky for y'all, it's free and waiting for you at Google Play if you're an Android user, or the App Store if you're an iPhone user. Just look for FM TALK 1065. Now, that's just one of the things the digital multi-tool does out there. You've got streaming of the station. You've got 55 hours a week of live local programming in podcast form. Our social media feeds are on there. Show schedules are on there. Plus the talkback feature that lets you press that microphone icon on the front screen and leave us a message. We can play back here on the air. Plus the latest traffic map. Apps updated, weather wherever you are updated as well. Just a few of the things going on the FM Talk 106.5 app. So with that, go check it out. You'll be able to get the podcast before anybody else. And this is one of these hours you're going to want to share the podcast with other folks, and maybe you can use the app to do that, because I'm going to call you a guru of so many things, a prophet in your own time of crypto. Scott Tindall, our guest in studio. Good to see you, man.
I don't know how to take that, but I'm glad to be here, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, you want to be a prophet in your own time, right? Or some other time?
I don't know. Are these the times that you want to be a prophet?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, would anybody listen to the prophet in these times?
If you call yourself the prophet, then you can't be the prophet.
Right, you have to have somebody else, like me, call you the prophet. You can't self-identify as a prophet and have anybody give you any kind of credence.
Yeah, you got to have a lot of third-party validators for that. Like, right. More than just one.
You think you had some off-site group that would validate your prophetness?
It's like getting a blue check mark.
You know? That's right. Instead of the Twitter blue, how do you get the prophet blue check mark?
And what would it be? It wouldn't be a check mark.
No, it couldn't be a check mark. It would have to be a halo.
Maybe a halo.
Halo. Yeah. Right, we'll work on that. So, I mean, as you as an entrepreneur, by this afternoon, Scott will have figured this out, and we'll have some way to blue halo profits in their own time.
It's a good thought process anyway.
So we're just kind of brainstorming here. It's great to have you back on, and I want to talk, obviously, cryptocurrencies with you. Can we, as we start this discussion, your involvement in digital currency, cryptocurrency, I probably semantically will step on things today, and you can correct me where I say things incorrectly, educate me. But in the digital currency world, how long have you been looking at this?
Basically since the start of the pandemic.
Okay.
When the pandemic broke out, we were doing a lot of work in the restaurant, hospitality, and tourism business, and quickly saw that they were going to be in big trouble, right, as the pandemic approached. So what we tried to start doing was figuring out what are going to be the winners and what are going to be the losers in the pandemic, regardless of this outcome. And we kept coming back to blockchain technology. Every industry we looked at, there seemed to be a blockchain solution that could help move that industry forward, even in light of the pandemic. So some would thrive better because of the pandemic. Others, we thought this will actually make the operational, you know, issues better, regardless of how the pandemic falls out. So blockchain technology essentially is just the underlying software that cryptocurrencies run on.
Okay, because that's what, when you said blockchain technology, I hear that and I think that means cryptocurrency. But
it could mean other things.
Okay.
That's right. So the cryptocurrency is just the payment layer on top of the technology. So Johnny Gwynn is a buddy, and he explained it to me like this. He said, think about the blockchain as being the underlying technology for your computer, like the software,
mm-hmm.
and then Windows is the program running.
Okay.
And then PayPal is a payment processor,
mm-hmm.
right? So the cryptocurrencies are just a payment layer on top of this underlying technology.
Okay.
So it's just digital payments is how to think about cryptocurrency, but it can be
But could used you do something else with blockchain?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So about 80% of all the goods in the world are shipped using TradeLens, which is a blockchain technology that all the shipping companies are using. And so they're tracking these digital ledgers. They're tracking where the equipment is or wherever the shipments are. They're paying each other through this process. They're eliminating a lot of central authority that slows down payments, that increases the price of payments. And so the shipping industry is now using TradeLens together. And so that's
happening. Running on blockchain.
It's running on blockchain technology. Yeah. So
is blockchain is hardware versus software, right? I mean, is a blockchain computer look different in its hardware than the PCs that are surrounding us in here?
So it's actually two different questions, I think. Blockchain technology can be used on any type of computer, but some computers are specifically designed to do specific things.
Okay, so it's more
Bitcoin,
software.
Yeah, so okay. Bitcoin miners are specifically built to just run the built Bitcoin algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to waste any computer power doing anything else.
Right.
And so in the early days of mining Bitcoin, people were just doing it on their home computers or on their laptops.
Yeah, we're going to get into that too, because right. that whole, like, the mining
and
concept.
That changed. But yeah, just the basic way to think about it is, just like your old computer used to run on DOS,
mm-hmm.
and Apple runs on Linux, blockchain is that. It
okay.
is DOS or Linux.
Okay.
And then we're just running programs on top of that.
Okay, well, I kind of had an epiphany there. Thank you, Scott. I appreciate
That's Johnny Gwynn's analogy, though.
Well, okay, don't encourage him. So now we understand kind of when people throw around the term blockchain, what we're talking about. Then cryptocurrency or digital currencies, what's the semantically any difference between the two?
Can I use that term? Not to me, yeah. Okay. They're interchangeable.
Okay. So that is what, even though what we should be interested in is learning about blockchain technology, what catches people's eye is the discussion of digital currency or cryptocurrency.
Yeah, that's the shiny object in front of us, right?
Right. I mean, I am interested in learning, because I'm a nerd like that, of how does it happen?
Mm-hmm.
But what I know people are interested in is, the outcome here of cryptocurrency. So what is, I know you get asked this, but, we're going to go basic here. What is digital currency or cryptocurrency? What is it? What's your Wikipedia definition of that?
Yeah, so the simple way to think about it is, let's take Bitcoin. Right,
okay.
That's the one everybody's heard of,
mm-hmm.
and they're most familiar with. So Bitcoin is a transaction process, and people get rewarded for validating the transaction. So when we go to the gas station, we swipe our credit card, right? The gas station sends a signal to Visa. Visa checks with your bank, everybody in between,
mm-hmm.
right, to validate whether or not you do or do not have money to pay for the gas.
Right.
That's all Bitcoin miners are doing. That's what Bitcoin transactions, when that's happening, somebody sending Bitcoin from one person to the other, these computers are working to validate whether or not this is or is not a valid transaction.
Okay.
And because of that, they receive payment. They receive payment in Bitcoin rather than in U.S. dollars.
In fiat currency.
Or fiat. Any form of fiat. So they're getting paid every day. So what's happening is how can the value of a coin travel like this is it's about the value of protecting the network. It's about the value of the work that's being performed.
And the work being performed, so people signing on to be validators or miners here, mm-hmm. right? I mean, is it somewhat equivalent to Uber or Lyft versus taxi?
It's decentralized.
Yes.
So that's a great analogy. So instead of having central banking authorities that tell you whether or not you do or do not have this, or large conglomerates like Visa, MasterCard,
mm-hmm.
you have millions of computers around the world, all decentralized, all owned by other people who are validating these transactions, and they're getting paid to do so. So
they don't have a shift. They can
peer-to-peer. Plug it in whenever you want, and you set the algorithm. And it runs. So what people do is they join mining pools. So then they pool their machines together to then increase their likelihood of earning rewards. If you just ran a machine on its own, it probably would. We're getting into technical details now, but the point is, you can buy a, let's just say, a Bitcoin miner, brand new, probably costs $10,000 today.
That's the hardware.
That's the hardware.
Right.
You plug it into the internet.
Okay.
And it will run this algorithm, and you will earn Bitcoin every day. Right now,
hopefully more than the power it consumes. Or?
Exactly. Right. So the break-even point right now is probably about 48 cents. If you're getting power cheaper than 48 cents, you're probably profitable mining Bitcoin.
48 cents per
kilowatt hour.
Okay.
So most
that's okay, that's interesting.
At home, it's like 18 cents probably. Most people at their houses are probably paying 18 cents.
Okay.
And there are some people that are doing home mining, and there's a big push now to that everyone should have one of these at their house.
Could it just be sitting there in the home office running in the corner?
It could, yeah. I mean, it runs on a little amped up power, but no different than your dryer in your house.
Right.
Right. So it's running on 240, and you just plug it into your dryer outlet.
Hey, okay. So I'm going to come back to so many open roads here to go down. Let's ask this kind of bigger question, too. Why the heck does digital currency or cryptocurrency exist? What was the push there?
So you can get into a lot of philosophical debates on in the beginning, what was the purpose? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the original push were these very strong libertarian mindsets.
Why are you looking at me?
Pushing that.
Yeah.
Well, we just happen to be here, you know. It's like looking in the mirror sometimes. And so what they did was they wanted to establish a peer-to-peer. It's always been a dream of, like, cryptographers and people to create a digital currency that was unfailable is a weird word to use.
I want to get into that, yeah.
But that is the most secure form of peer-to-peer transaction that's ever been created.
Y'all remember cryptography, right? So sending secret messages. You get the secret decoder in the cereal box, and I could send something, you know, and only Scott could decipher it. It could be traveled through many hands, but only you could decipher it.
So that's why cryptocurrency scares people when they hear the word crypto. It should make them feel good because there's a cryptographic process that has to be unlocked in order for the transaction to take place.
Right.
Somebody
can't nab it midstream.
Exactly. That's right. And, you know, people talk about the power consumption. The power consumption is one of the leading reasons why it is so secure. Because in order to hijack the system, you would have to control 51% of all the miners on the networks around the world. So in order to do that, it's basically virtually impossible now that we have millions of miners in 200 countries or so.
Right. So, because I want to get into that, you know, why is it safe? Hackers hack everything out there. There's probably, I hadn't even opened up the text line, probably people saying, Sean, everything gets hacked. Federal government gets hacked. Your credit card gets hacked.
Yep.
You know, you have denial of service. They hack your thermostat in the house. Whatever. They're hacking it. Why is this not at risk the same way?
It can. If they can control 51% of the consensus of the miners, of 51% of the millions of miners around the world that are all plugged in different networks and different countries.
There's not one place for them to go.
No, there's no single source of, I mean, if you could make the internet disappear, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you cut off the internet to the world.
Right. That would be the way.
Yeah, but everything
but
else.
But then there would be no value in it for them. There would be no incentive. There'd be no profit. I mean,
that's
you
right.
could do it just to
you
destroy
would just destroy
it.
The network, but what's the value in that?
But you would not be able to cash in, so to speak, because with it would go.
Yeah, if someone destroyed the internet, I think Bitcoin would be so far down the list of things they were trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
true. I mean, okay, so with that, how do I know that they're not even nefarious? Mm-hmm. How do I know that? And I want to get into crypto wallets and all that kind of stuff. But how do I know it won't disappear? You know, how? I mean, people worried, you know, about banks running out of money. Heck, the FDIC comes in. How do I know that I won't go check my wallet there and I'll have zero?
So there's two or three different ways to approach that. The first one is, I tell people when they're just starting out, Coinbase is a pretty safe place to keep your money. It's publicly traded in the United States, a U.S.-based company. That's about the safest kind of exchange you could hope for. But the second thing is called cold wallets. You can actually get your cryptocurrency and you can remove it from the network. You can put it on a jump drive or a thumb drive and you hold the keys. You hold the password to that. Now, the problem with that is if you lose that password.
Right. There's no one there
done.
To back you up. I mean, if you lose your PIN at the bank, they'll say, okay, we'll reset it.
Right.
because they have that control, but you only have the control of that.
Yeah, you have control of your passwords, and if you lose them, they're gone forever.
Okay.
So that's, we call that like dead coin, right?
Well, I want to get into that too, because if we come back from the break, I want to talk about kind of how the value of crypto, where it is, and then the finite nature of it. But then what happens when some disappears? Listen, I got a lot of questions. Our guest, Scott Tindall, he's answering them. If you got questions, you can hit us up on the text line, 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1225, FM Talk 106.5. Continuing our conversation with Scott Tindall. Talking cryptocurrencies, and actually, I think gave me a little time for the blockchain that I'm interested in, too, because I mean, I know the shiny thing, and we're talking about the shiny thing, but I was interested kind of how all this works. Is there a Levi Strauss moment to this? In other words, you know, I talk about this with my kids sometimes. It's like, you know, the gold rush. We don't know many legacies left from the 49ers out there that went on the gold rush, but you sure do know Levi Strauss. Is there money to be made in running one machine in your house or 20 machines to do these verifications? Is that a good way to look at this, and that's a way to make money?
Yeah, I think that you're going to see a tremendous number of new professionals who only operate inside the crypto industry. Like myself, you know, I've done so many different things that now I use those experiences from my previous, you know, careers or businesses to apply to what we're doing today. And so everything I do now is inside cryptocurrencies. And so I'm kind of a good example of how you can use your skills that you have in your current profession or your life experiences and apply that to crypto now. Because what's happening is the people that understand it, and the people that understand it a lot better than me, promise, but there are 15-year-old kids right now that are doing development work for some of these crypto companies and getting paid $100,000 a year in high school to do the developing and coding because it's such a new new field.
There is the Levi's.
That's right.
There's going to be. Somebody supplying, you know, as more and more cryptocurrency comes out, there's more demand for
vendors of all kinds.
Okay. Yeah. So there is something to that.
System. And the way I've explained it to people is, if I wanted to get into the oil and gas industry today, I've got to compete with people who have been doing it for three lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to get into the crypto industry today, I've just got to compete with people who have been dabbling with it for a year or two. Most people have not taken it seriously. That's been mostly hobbyists. Now, there are large global corporations that are taking it very seriously now.
Yeah, I mean, you see
a ton of money.
Yeah.
And there's some that are publicly traded now, but the mom and pop, like small business side, absolutely. We could come up with way. Like, I'll give you examples. Like, one of the projects we're involved with is called Helium, and it's a decentralized wireless communication network. So it's like, if you think about Airbnb, mm-hmm. they're the brand, but different people own the hotel rooms.
Mm-hmm.
In Helium is the telecom company, but they don't own the hardware. So people like myself, just individual people, own the hardware that operates the network. And then we get paid via the Helium Network token, a cryptocurrency, for operating that hardware. So you could have one of these at your house, you put it on your roof, and you get paid every day this Helium Network token, which today trades for $44, and a year ago was trading at about $1.50.
And it also harkens back to cottage industry. I mean, it's almost like we're going back to, you know, some of the colonial times where the business was decentralized.
That's right.
It was, you know, this farm, or this person, you know, you sourced from a bigger area than just, you know, the standard business.
Through this distributed nature, we're going to get paid for the things that we used to give away, right? So you think about your data, everybody gets your data. Right?
Correct.
None of us are getting paid for our data.
Correct.
But now there are cryptocurrencies that are trading up on that data. So there's one called XYO, and you can download the app. You download the coin app, and they collect your data while you're driving around, and you get paid in the XYO token for sharing that data.
Versus Google taking it for free.
Versus them taking it for free. You know, another good example is when you're doing you're searching on the internet, you're getting served all these ads.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're not getting rewarded for that. But there's something now called the BAT, the Basic Attention Token. You can download this app on your computer, and you get paid for the ads that you're served. So you're getting a fraction of that ad revenue that you're viewing. So you're getting paid for your data. So this will continue to happen, and through blockchain technology, we'll be able to track it. So same thing. Like, if you want to be able to release your health data, you're going to be able to release specific health data to specific companies and get paid for it in their native cryptocurrency.
Wow. Coming right back, we'll get your questions and some more of mine here. We didn't even get to the question about the finite nature of Bitcoin, for example. We'll get to that when we come back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Our guest, Scott Tindall, and I mean, I just realized in our conversation now, we'll have to get you booked back soon, because I'm going to run like through some of the questions I just got to ask, and then I got a text line full of questions for
you. Great.
One of the ones you and I talked about during the break is this idea, let's talk about Bitcoin, finite nature of Bitcoin. And the story, there's one that has gotten more attention than others, where you had the lost cold wallet.
Right.
Cold case and cold wallet.
Lose your wallet, your cold wallet with your passwords. You're done.
Okay. If there is, if that happens, then it's less however many Bitcoins were in that cold wallet. Am I right? There's a finite number of Bitcoin. That's why it's.
That's right. There's 21 million Bitcoin that will ever be created.
Okay.
Right. And that will not take place. The last Bitcoin won't be mined until 2140. Right. So we've got 118 years.
Okay.
Until the last Bitcoin will be mined.
Then who stops it? Well, it doesn't matter.
The algorithm, it doesn't matter at that point. It's 140 years from now.
Yeah. But,
So there's 21 million. And if you have a million in a wallet and you lose it, now you have 20 million, right?
The value of the rest of them goes up, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of times, it's a great question you asked. A lot of times people don't think that far into it, but tracking dead wallets or cold wallets is very important to understanding the real value, the underlying value. Coins themselves.
Because you have to know how many are out there.
Yeah.
I mean, if we have X number of beers and it's a hot summer day.
That's right.
If somebody comes by and takes a six pack from us, the other six are worth a lot more.
Yeah, the value of the remaining beers is substantial.
Right. See, we're speaking in language I can understand.
So, if you think about it like that, it'd be the same as, you want to keep up with it and... The way that you can keep up with it that's so much different than in other types of industries is the blockchain has all the wallets. So if that wallet was ever opened or money ever moved out of that wallet, you would know that wallet's no longer dead, right?
Yes.
So there are these bots out there that track Bitcoin wallets now, and you can get like on your Twitter feed, and it'll say like,
this one just opened back up.
Yeah, this wallet just moved for the first time in 5 years, and they moved $22 million to this other unknown wallet. Or, there's different...
And the wallet. Give me the quick explanation of what a crypto wallet is.
It's just a file that contains your data.
So that could be that thumb drive if it's a cold wallet, or if it's linked to the web,
it's on an exchange, yeah.
But how do you... Okay. Computer, you get struck by lightning on your home PC or wherever you're running this from.
As long as you have your passwords, you can access your wallet.
Okay. So as long as you have your passwords, no matter what, you could...
That's right.
Go find you some computer on the far edge of the earth and plug in. And
as long as you got the internet.
How do you get that money out? How do you get that value into fiat currency?
So there are exchanges online, like Coinbase is one that we just talked about. And there are others all around the world that operate this, right? Different countries have different rules on what it takes to operate an exchange. Okay. Not all exchanges are created equal. Just like not all banks are created equal, or not all other businesses.
Okay.
What they also say is if your money, they being crypto people, that if your money is in an exchange, it's not really your money, right? It's not really your crypto. They're holding custody of your crypto. You're not holding custody of your crypto.
Okay.
You're trusting the exchange. So people say, oh, well, hasn't Bitcoin been hacked? Yes, exchanges have been hacked, right? Places where cryptocurrency is traded. But that's because it's a private business that got hacked. So when you leave your cryptocurrency on an exchange, you're trusting that private business to hold on to your money.
So you recommend you bring it back?
Most people who have substantial value don't leave it on the exchanges. They keep it in a cold wallet or a safe wallet.
All right. I want to talk about a couple things here. Oh, my gosh, on the list here. What's the deal on the multiple cryptocurrencies? You know, it's like every day I hear more and more cryptocurrencies out there. Do they talk to, is there an exchange rate between, like, you know, like, say we got, I got money in Bitcoin, but I want to get in Ethereum or Helium. Right. Or
yeah, that's exactly what the exchanges do. So take Coinbase. That's the one that most people are familiar with. You can go on Coinbase, you trade just like you would stocks. The difference in where a lot of people are making money, younger folks especially, is there's not a minimum balance you have to have to day trade. So if you're trading stocks, you know, you've got to have that minimum balance in there. In crypto, you don't have that. So people are day trading all day long.
Moving from one crypto to another. Okay.
And the fees are pretty minimal. And so what you see with the different cryptos, basically the way they get broken down is there's Bitcoin,
mm-hmm.
and then there's everything else.
Okay.
So there's Bitcoin, and then there's altcoin, meaning the alternative.
Everything else is?
Everything else. And of
OTBC,
those everything
other
else,
than Bitcoin.
Yeah. Everything else, it's mainly, all these coins are startups. So you got to look at each of these coins like you would a business,
mm-hmm.
and evaluate whether or not it is a good business proposition. Does it have value? Is it a rug pull? I mean, so much of this is unregulated. There's coins that get hyped up and people pour money into it because they think they're going to ride this golden wave. And there's a rug pull and somebody that had 90% of all the coin dumps it at once.
Buyer beware.
Yeah. I mean, it is not for the faint of heart.
But it's also purely
information that we can all gather.
But Bitcoin, is its celebrity nature because it is more trustworthy? Can I say that?
Yeah, you certainly could say it's more trustworthy, and it's the most decentralized, and it was the one that kind of created it created the industry of this peer-to-peer financial process, you know, working and being trustworthy,
right?
Us being able to trust that if I send money around the world, that it's actually going to get where mm-hmm. I think it's going to go, and it's not going to be intercepted in between.
When does digital currency go mainstream? When are we? I mean, I know it's a lot more mainstream than it was a year ago or 2 years ago, but when is it accepted at most places?
So I think there's two questions in there. One, I'd say it's very mainstream when Matt Damon and Tom Brady and everybody else are doing commercials, and it's on the jersey or mm-hmm. patches of the umpires in the World Series.
Fair,
right? Second thing is, when does it become more utilized?
Yeah, because they're advertising people trying to invest. Mm-hmm. Like, it's what I think about with my crypto is invest to earn money. I don't think about it as going down and buying a hamburger.
Well, the problem right now with on the investing side is most financial advisors aren't allowed to advise on crypto. So there's a big gap in that industry. But I think people are using it every day and you just don't realize it. Like TradeLens, like it's industry specific.
Okay.
Right. So from a consumer standpoint, it will soon make a lot more sense to pay in some let's say Amazon. This is going to happen. I'm going to predict this.
Business is not going to let this go without being part.
Yeah, this is going to happen. Amazon's going to create its own token.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to buy and sell goods on Amazon using the Amazon token. Right, you're going to have to convert your fiat into mm-hmm. that token. They're going to control the value of that token. But what they're also going to do is they're going to take over that 3.5 cents, that 3.5% that Visa and MasterCard used to take.
They're going to get it.
They're going to get it, and they're going to charge you 1% instead of 3.5. You're going to get the cost savings. They're going to make tens of billions of more dollars.
Bingo.
That's how it's going to get played out.
I'll try to run through lots of questions coming in for you, Scott. Don says, Sean, if you get a chance to ask Scott, does he foresee some of the other cryptocurrency companies that offer blockchain technology reaching the monetary value of Bitcoin of around maybe $40,000? Like, do they go
from a coin standpoint? It's all about the market cap. So it's hard to know.
In other words, will Ethereum be trade? I don't know what Bitcoin would say, $50,000.
Oh, yeah. So is anything going to flip Bitcoin? Yeah. So the market cap for all the altcoins is going to grow beyond Bitcoin,
okay.
I think. Also, I think I'm supposed to say none of this is financial advice.
Right, okay. Right. Yeah, we're just two guys talking here.
Yeah.
Another question, would solar energy be powerful enough to run one of these mining operations? Funny, you and I talked about that during the break.
Yeah, they're certainly powerful enough. The question is it affordable? What is the cost? What's the trade-off? Solar is still expensive right now, but in other parts of the world, they're using solar. In China, they're using hydro and, you know, it's taking wild. This running water through this, you know,
to do mining.
Yeah, and they're pulling, you know, hydropower out of the Himalayas to power some of these things. Well, before they got shut down.
Ken asks if you can take someone's blockchain technology and then start your own. If you can take someone's blockchain technology and start your own, is that legal?
Yeah, almost everything is open source in this network of Web3 and crypto. So, if you find anybody's code, you can use it however you want.
Okay. Tyler says, what happens when the USA decides to tax and regulate crypto? It's more of a political.
They're going to tax and regulate it. I mean, we're going to pay taxes on it is what's going to happen.
So, I mean, right now, you have it as a competitor to, obviously, the U.S. dollar, but eventually you think
it's going to be like the FAA, right? Like, nobody really gets bent out of shape that there's air traffic controllers telling us when we can and cannot take off.
Right.
So I think if you get some kind of reasonable regulation that just kind of establishes some ground rules, that's probably okay. I don't think you're going to see a hyper...
There's no
way to hyper-regulate a decentralized system.
That's what I'm
saying.
There's no way for them to get in, and there's no Fed in this.
That's kind of the point.
You know, right, exactly. So Sean says, I have $300 worth of Bitcoin I bought back in 2017. It's at $776 now. What would be the best thing to do with this at the moment?
You never know anybody's personal situation, but most people I know say to hold your Bitcoin.
Okay. Unnamed texter here to ask you about utility coins and XRP. I got no idea. What is...
So XRP is Ripple. They're undergoing an SEC investigation right now. Because like I said, each of these coins is its own individual startup, essentially. So Ripple is going through some SEC stuff. There's a lot of debate on how it's going to shake out. I don't think anybody really knows yet. But from utility coin standpoint, I think that Helium is a great example of that, right?
Okay.
The coin is, you get paid the coin for doing the work. You provide the connectivity.
Right. You're doing,
Your machine, your hardware is providing the connectivity. And you get paid for that work you're doing, and you get paid in the Helium Network token. So then, like, you get paid every day, or it's really every couple of hours. If you wanted to, you could turn that right into a U.S. dollar, or you can leave it in Helium, or you can turn it into Bitcoin.
Yeah, okay, that's what I was saying. So I get paid daily with Helium, and I have a feeling that I want to have it in Bitcoin. And I can see what the exchange rate is, and when the exchange rate's right, I can make that trade and go into Bitcoin.
Exactly.
All right, coming right back, more of your questions, and there's a ton of them here, so hopefully we'll get to most of them for the end of the hour. Our guest, Scott Tindall, we're talking about cryptocurrencies, digital currencies, and I'm realizing how little I know.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right back to our discussion with Scott Tindall, talking cryptocurrencies, digital currencies. A lot of questions here. This texter says, if your crypto is in a wallet, does it still make a profit, or is it, so to speak, frozen?
It still has the value of whatever the coin's value is. No different than if I have a baseball card in a collection. The card is worth whatever the market says the card is.
On that day?
On that day.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean...
So you still gain value by not having it on the network.
It doesn't, because that's the thing. I mean, people have to get this idea, I guess. You know, we think fiat currency. All right. So we put that in the bank. We put it in the money market. Some kind of, you know, low interest, or let's stay out of equities. We'll just stay at bonds or something like that. It's building interest. The amount of time we leave it in there for them to use for other purposes, it builds interest. That's really not, crypto seems to be more like an equity than it would be that, right? That it builds value.
Yeah, there's a debate amongst the SEC on whether or not it is an asset or not.
Or is it currency, yeah.
Yeah, and so the way I look at it is most certainly as an asset. I don't believe that there's a fixed value on any of these.
Okay.
But I don't know. That's kind of a roundabout way of asking it. The government will decide for us if it's an asset or not.
Explain the quick version, too, for people why cryptocurrencies. Right now, we look at this inflation that is hitting so hard out there. Why are they not subject to that?
Well, cryptocurrency is not subject to inflation.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, it's about the expressed value.
It's almost inverse, right? Yeah, as it's gone up, as inflation goes up, it seems like crypto's value goes up. Maybe it's analog.
Yeah, it's considered an alternative asset, although for most people it should probably be a lot heavier in their portfolio than it is. Once municipal and state treasuries start putting their money into Bitcoin, you're going to see the value increase substantially. And they're going to have to. They're going to have to start diversifying their books, and they're going to start putting part of their treasury in there. City of Miami's already doing it. City of Miami has started their own coin. City of New York has started their own coin. The mayor of Miami is taking his salary in Bitcoin now. The employees of the city of Miami are now eligible to accept their salary in Bitcoin if they'd like.
Can you imagine that? And the scary thing for people that, I mean, if you're a positive person and you're aggressive, you think, wow, my income will go up as the value of these Bitcoins go up. But if you're negative, you're like, oh gosh, you know, I need X number of dollars to live on. And if this goes down, then I won't be in trouble.
The freedom loving person loves that they can make that decision for themselves.
True.
that's what's fun.
What does it mean to stake a coin?
So staking a coin is when you agree to leave your coin in a wallet for a specific amount of time, and you get paid interest in exchange for doing that. So what you're doing is you're locking up the liquidity so that people have more confidence that there's not going to be
destabilization
of the price. Yeah, so it's saying, I'm not going to sell these million coins for 90 days. And in exchange, you'll pay me fixed interest on top of whatever the value goes up or down.
So there is an interest component.
Absolutely. It's a whole gamification, right? This gamification of life is what is happening. We're using the same game theory as we would anywhere else in business. And we say, do I trust that I, you know, would hold this for 90 days? Okay, if I do, I might as well make additional interest on top of the underlying value of the asset.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at a project, a percentage of coins staked tells you how much confidence people have in the upward trajectory of that project, because they're saying, I have confidence that this is not going to lose me money. I'm going to stake out my coin. So if you see
a big play like that, and then that gives you, as somebody who hasn't bought in, to go, okay, these people believe in it.
That's right. And so that's one of the, you know, we keep talking about helium, but you can go out there and you can look on each of these projects and see how much is available. Everything's on the blockchain. So like we can look and see, I just had it here a second ago. Well, you can look at the percentages staked. I think it's like something like 22% of all helium tokens are staked right now.
Okay.
That gives you the confidence to know that you can't just have a giant liquidation
right. And
bottom out your price.
So, and is that, does that come from a couple of whales? Does it come from a bunch of individuals? Is there any way to see that?
Yeah, you can go on any of these cryptos that are worth a salt will have their data published. You'll be able to see it in real time, and you'll be able to look. And like, so we can see that there's 460,000 helium hotspots in 162 countries, 35,000 cities.
And that's updated daily or whatever?
It's updated real time. And these hotspots, 460,000 hotspots, are owned by 162,993 individual people.
Wow.
So that's how decentralized a project is. And that matters too, because people will push crypto as decentralization. But like Ethereum, 70% of Ethereum was pre-mined before the coin was public. So it's not very decentralized.
Pre-mined, and somebody's holding that 70% and only 30% at play? Or?
Yeah, well, the founders can hold on to whatever percent they want.
Sure.
Just like you would equity in your business.
But I mean, it
changes the decentralization conversation.
Sure. I got to ask you this one. It's funny. I got a text about this. I got to ask you this one before we wrap up, and Dalton will laugh back there. Because this is the thing, as much as I'm interested and excited about cryptocurrency, the NFT world, man, dude, I'm an old man or something like that. I just don't, I mean, I see it happening, but I don't get it.
The way to think about NFTs right now is art is just the component that's bringing attention to it. The important part is the smart contract attached to it. So think about NFT this way. Bama football tickets, right? Bama football tickets will soon be an NFT. It'll be a smart contract. And you will get your tickets. And if you sell your tickets on the secondary market, the university will keep a percentage of that sale because they'll be able to track the smart contract and how it played out.
Right.
Same thing with bands. You go to a concert, sell your ticket on a secondary market, the band is going to retain some of that price.
Okay.
That's where you're going
to
see.
That makes sense to me. But
so the NFT is essentially is just permission to do something.
Yeah, but if I get a piece of digital art from Beeple or whoever, it's digital art. Everybody else can see it. And I guess you can argue, because I've tried to make it like the Mona Lisa. Everybody else can see a picture of the Mona Lisa, but there's value in owning the original, I guess.
You can hang a poster of a Lamborghini on your wall, or you can have the Lamborghini in your garage. One is worth something. One is not.
But how do I realize, other than just appreciation, which is...
These people are gambling, right? That's what they're doing. But the other thing is, a lot of people buying NFTs, it seems like a lot of money. But to them, it's not real money because they started investing in Ethereum when it was $150, and they've 20x'd their money.
Yeah.
So for them, it's not real money. Like, you meet people that have made $1 million in a year off of, $5,000. They don't treat that $1 million like the guy that has to go out and work hard every day for $1 million. So when,
gotcha.
And they're also, they want to belong to a club, right? I'm a part of the, so I want to be a
social,
part of.
There's a absolutely. Social part of this.
Yeah. It's like, I want to be able to flex and put the logo, my NFT as my Twitter profile. And that matters. That matters more than a blue check mark, because Twitter decides who gets a blue check mark. Cash decides who owns one of these projects.
You helped me along on the understanding of this. We will talk about this going forward. People want to reach out to you because you've melted down my text line like we're mining over here. Social media wise, people can reach out to you.
Yeah, I'm Scott Tindall on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's probably the easiest. I tweet about cryptocurrencies, so if people want to interact on Twitter, that might be the easiest way. But look, there's just so much to learn. Nobody knows it all. Like we were talking about, there's 7,500 coins out there. So people don't need to be discouraged. They need to just learn a little bit every day. We're not going to have a choice because it's coming at us fast.
Now, be thinking here on this profit thing with the Halo.
Halo coin.
Blue Halo.
Yeah, we're going to see if Halo coin exists.
Yeah.
We'll just have Halo coin.
Work it out. Come back and see me soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Scott Tindall, our guest. Coming right back, Cameron Smith joining us next hour, plus Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth, all straight ahead on Midday Mobile.